So next we'll be hearing from Keith Canfield of the Clinton Climate Initiative. With 20 years in the corporate world, most recently as the Global Marketing Director for a British biotech firm, Keith Canfield is entering the seventh year of what was originally meant to be a six-month leave of absence to work in the nonprofit sector. Keith joined the Clinton Foundation's Climate Initiative after they worked together on a post-Katrina energy-efficient rebuilding project that he designed in New Orleans. The project was a large-scale rapid rebuilding effort which renovated 44 homes in New Orleans damaged by the storm in 100 days, cutting energy usage for their low-income residents an average of 48% from pre-Katrina levels, which is very impressive. The project received a Home Depot Foundation Affordable Housing Built Responsibly Award in 2009. Keith received a degree from the University of Mississippi and Vanderbilt University, and he also holds designations of New Product Development Professional and Lead AP. Keith has been with the Clinton Foundation's Home Energy Affordable Loan Program in Little Rock, Arkansas since its inception in 2009, and he currently serves as the Deputy Program Director. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Keith.
Great. Thank you, Emma. And thanks to the EPA and Emma in particular for putting together this three-part series. I think it's been great, and we appreciate the opportunity to participate today. I'm here to talk a little bit about the Home Energy Affordability Loan Program, or as we affectionately call it, HEAL, and specifically our experience in implementing that with the City of Little Rock, Arkansas, as well as our largest healthcare university in the state, the University of Arkansas Medical Sciences. Just a couple brief comments about HEAL and why that approach. We see the employer as a great aggregator of demand for residential retrofits, and it's a great way to really bring all the key parts of getting a residential retrofit done together under one roof: the financing, the demand, the information. And the workplace has been used before to do this kind of thing. If you think about 401ks and employer-provided health care, both of those are really ideas that really caught fire and got more than 50% market share in the workplace in a relatively short period of time. Very briefly, I just want to show for those of you that aren't familiar with HEAL how it works. It's really three components. There's a commercial savings side where we'll go out, work with the employer, audit their facilities, find energy saving opportunities in their facilities, and then we ask them to take some of those savings and create an employee loan fund so that their employees can also do similar energy saving opportunities in their homes and pay that loan back through payroll deductions. What we did with the City of Little Rock, we were a successful Climate Showcase Community grantee with the City of Little Rock to actually do a variation on this model, and that variation was for entities like municipalities and state-owned institutions that may have restrictions from employee lending, and we replaced that employee lending function with a outside lender, which for the most part has been a credit union. Again, that was what we piloted at the City of Little Rock and the University of Arkansas Medical Sciences. So if you think about it, the workplace also, I would argue, is the original social network. There was a great presentation last week from Liz on this call about community-based social marketing, and the workplace operates just like a community. It is a community. And the good news is that word travels fast when things are going well, and bad news is word travels probably even faster if things aren't going so well. So it's a really important place to plan and manage communication strategies. So what we really learned from this project and the communication aspects, and I'll be quite frank and honest and say we didn't have this figured out on the front end when we probably stepped into the City of Little Rock to start our employee presentations. But we think we've got a pretty good feel for it now, and that is really write your ending first. And I'm not talking about some kind of hokey new age idea of visualizing your success, I'm really thinking more along the lines of what will you be judged by? What data are you going to need to make a case of success? Who's going to need to see it? What type of proof will they require? That kind of thing. Everybody's seen some variation of the traditional marketing funnel. And really what I'm suggesting is that you actually start with the end in mind and work backward. In fact, I think the funnel itself is a little bit of a misnomer, and everybody that works in energy efficiency, I think, will agree it's not easy. And having a funnel would indicate that gravity will just kind of pull you through, and we don't have to work hard to get folks to make energy efficiency improvements. And we know that's not the case. So I tend to think of it more as a staircase. And each of those levels of building awareness and getting interest and on up to the purchase of a retrofit, it takes effort to get the prospect up that case. So you've got to think about at each step what information or what testimonials or what communication is going to help them keep them on the path and help them make that next step, that it's worth the effort to do that. And by the way, it starts with not making a really scary process or a process that looks scary from the beginning. So the way we think about it is that really you have a case to make to the funders and decision makers that are going to decide whether or not to do your program. So it could be city managers, it could be corporate executives. So you've got to have the data and analysis and the answers to their questions to be able to do that. But that's not the only trip up that staircase of marketing you're going to do. You need to have pilot participants that are going to be the first to try this process out. And we try to very deliberately pick those that will also be good spokespeople should they have a good experience, and we want to engineer that. And then, of course, you're going to do the whole process again when you open up the program to general participation, which in the case of our program is to all the employees in a particular company or organization. So when we think about those 4 points, again, it comes down to what data do you need and where do you get it? Who needs to be convinced? How do you communicate back your success, and when do you do that? And then the role of media and how that can help tell that story. So the first step in that process is really data capture, and this is one that we did not have in place when we first started with the city of Little Rock, for example. But now we have a very deliberate way of capturing the improvement that's made and the employee attitudes. And we do that with a baseline survey of the general employee population before we ever set foot in the organization to begin marketing the program. And then we'll also do a survey for the participants. So when people opt into our program, they get a little survey that kind of compares them. And then they'll also get a survey at the completion of their retrofit on how their experience was and how their views have changed. And then after the program's over at a concluding point, we'll also do a general population survey. So the point is to get a baseline and then the improvement in a way that is measurable and that you can then use when you make your case to continue the program or to roll it out somewhere else. So in the case of our program, we were able to go back to, in this case, the University of Arkansas Medical Sciences and talk about how their employees viewed them more positively for offering the program and that it contributes to a better workplace. The second thing that we feel very strongly about is, and Emma touched on it, and I think Kara Pike did a great job last week talking about it, is connecting with your audience through organization-specific stories. So we really look for spokespeople within the organization that represent the different parts of the organization that can speak very clearly to the benefits. In the case of, again, UAMS, We had someone from admin, we had someone from the medical side, and then we also had actually one of the vice chancellors who talked about the program so that we can show that to other hospitals and municipalities that are interested so they can hear what a decision maker thinks about the program. And we did it in multiple media. Again, not everybody are video junkies. So we have case studies that are printed. We also have email blasts. But it's important to really have a wide variety of these that really speak to the different constituencies and targets that you're going to be working with within this organization and with the next one that you'll be offering the program to. We also think it's really important to retell the story once you do have results. And again, if you think about that on the front end, this is something, this is a one of the slides that we talk about with employers on why they should offer this program. And, you know, the question always comes up, well, if energy efficiency is such a great opportunity for homeowners and the environment, why aren't they doing it themselves? And we reference this 2010 Building Performance Institute study, and it lists these five reasons why people tend not to self-include on energy efficiency. And then when we go back at a point in the project, we actually retell the story with actual results. So here are those five reasons, and here are some of the things that your employees are saying about the program and about what you've enabled them to do, and the return on investment that they've gotten and the money that they've saved. So you're using real data to go back and convince the decision makers that this is a great program, it's worth continuing, or data that you can use with similarly situated employers to give them reasons to offer the program. And then the fourth thing, again, to really consider carefully on the front end and then again on the back end of a project, is when to use targeted earned media. And, you know, it really is important to think of your media and your story as being a perishable item. I mean, we all like to see our programs in print. It gives us a little validation for what sometimes is a very long, lonely slog to get people to convert to energy efficiency projects. But keep in mind, you know, a story is only exclusive once, and it's only fresh a few times. Then it's, you know, no longer newsworthy in some of the media circles. So make sure that you're using that precious media capital only when it's most beneficial to you to continue to advance the goals of your project. And think of that as precious capital. Not all publicity is good publicity. And lastly, I'll just return to these four items again and put up the communications framework that, again, the EPA is proposing. I think it's brilliant. And just link that back to kind of how our four little tenets on what to really design on the front end for, you know, design for your outcomes, really connect to the different parts of that process. And again, we think it's a great one, and it's a process that we will actually use and probably a more direct linkage going forward. We are in the process of rolling this project out to other parts of the country. So all these tools and testimonials and case studies and most importantly data are absolutely essential if you're going to take your program and move it to other parts of the country. They're going to want to see the experience that different municipalities had with it or employers, and it's important to have good and strong data. And then I stole this from my friends at the EPA, but it is so true that as you're rolling the program out or continuing to implement your program, even though it sometimes seems to be a bit of an uphill battle, keep calm and replicate. It will indeed work. And with that, I'll turn it back over to Emma.
Thanks, Keith. And I'd just like to reiterate what Keith mentioned in sort of the crosswalk between the framework that EPA is developing and the four key points that he outlined in his presentation, because I think the different examples that you're hearing today are very relatable back to the framework, and that's certainly the kind of data that we've based this sort of step-by-step approach on. And I think Keith's crosswalk with the arrows just highlights how it is an iterative process with a lot of two-way communication between, you know, your programs that you're developing and the audiences that you're working with, and a learning process. So that's a really important point. So thank you for pointing that out. So we'll go to our next poll question, and we'd like to hear from folks on the line what your experience is with mentoring other organizations or encouraging program replication. As Keith demonstrated, the HEAL program is working to replicate across the country, and we're interested to hear what experience folks on the line have had with similar types of work to promote replication of your projects in other communities. So folks could just take a minute to fill out the poll. We'd be really appreciative. And also I'll mention that you can hear more about the work that the HEAL program is doing under EPA's Climate Showcase Communities grant that we have with them, and that can be found at epa.gov/climateshowcase. We have a profile on each of our grantees there and a lot of great information about the HEAL program. All right, I think we can go ahead and pull up our poll results. Great, so it looks like just over half of folks on the line have started to help share our successes with other agencies, and fewer folks have worked on successfully mentoring and replicating, and we have seen about 40%, it looks like, have had key elements of their programs replicated by others. And I think that's something that we at EPA are seeing with the Climate Showcase Communities program. We're really working on promoting replication of those models. And we have seen a lot of, you know, people will develop key strategies that will then get replicated, not necessarily whole-scale programs. And it is certainly a challenge to work to promote that exchange for program replication. So we appreciate your insights on there, and hopefully a lot of the conversation we're having today will help provide insights on how you can work on that type of replication.